Hello, how's it going?
You know, I guess I would say it is up and down. I am still kind of in a transitional phase of life here, and every week brings new opportunities and new potential. And of those, every week some fall by the wayside that I was very excited about, and some become reality that I was excited about. And that is a fascinating roller coaster ride that I am living.
I bet.
Yeah. But how are you doing?
I am okay. I've got a thousand things on my plate, as always, but I have tried to pause the to-do list this week to tackle one main thing that has gotten left out of my life for a long time now. So the house that we live in has kind of two sides to it. It almost operates like a duplex. The second side of it is more like a mother-in-law quarters. And it has its own hot water heater. And quite some time ago, the hot water heater went out. And I have just not gone and replaced it because we can function just fine on the other side of the house. Well, I went to go replace it this week, and I can't get the darn water to shut off. Like, there's a valve above the hot water heater. I crank down the valve. Water still flows. So I go a little bit further up the plumbing system, and there's another valve. And I crank down that valve, and water still flows. And so I've come to the conclusion that both of these valves have failed, and I need to just fix the valves. So I shut off the power to the pump house because we have like a spring that brings us all of our water. And do you know what? Water still flows. This is literally impossible. But the way our house, our spring works, there is like a separate system of like gravity fed water that I thought only ever went to the garden, but somehow it must be piped into part of the house. And to my knowledge, there's no way to turn off this gravity fed water delivery system. And so I am halfway through a project and I went to the extreme of point of no return. I'm going to cut the old pipe. I'm going to put a new pipe on. And I realize after I cut it that the new pipe is the wrong size. And so anyway, I'm tired of being a homeowner. That's my point. That's how I'm doing. I'm tired of being a homeowner.
You know, years ago when we came out and visited you as a family, I believe the water heater on the other side of your house had failed recently.
Oh, yeah, that may be.
Because I think you showed it to me. And I did not know at the time that it was a manageable job to change out a hot water heater. And you were kind of explaining to me what you had done.
Yeah. On the main house, it's a very straightforward process. Evidently, not so much in the other side.
Gravity's the worst.
Yeah. It's bringing me down. All right. Well, you didn't call to talk about plumbing. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, I was just mentioning that I'm in this sort of new transitional phase of life. And one of the things I'm doing is applying for some part-time coaching jobs. And I have had to fill out a host of applications. And every one of those applications has had an interesting and somewhat complicated question on it for me. And that question is, do you have any of the following disabilities? And one of the things listed is ADHD. And I have pretty severe ADHD. I take very strong ADHD medication as prescribed by my doctor and have been in counseling. And I'm always working on managing that aspect of my life. And I have never fully thought of it as a disability. And every time I filled out one of those applications, I have been stuck with the question of, do I fill out, yes, I have a disability, which is not a way I would normally categorize myself, Or do I say no and deny the fact that I have ADHD, which is also not a way that I would categorize myself? And all of this brings up all sorts of thoughts and feelings about my own ADHD experience. Mm. And so I want to talk today, maybe about ADHD, maybe about neurodivergence in general. I am super interested to hear, you know, we have been friends for so long that we were friends long before I understood that I had ADHD, all the way through the last 20 years of me working to understand this, getting on medication. I mean, you've been friends with me through the whole journey. And so I just want to talk about ADHD today.
You know, that's super fascinating. I would never have thought about that as a disability either. And I actually don't know what I think of it, but I can imagine how complicated that would be to put on an application. And I recently read a book called Demystifying Disability, and it was an interesting take on just all the types of disabilities that are out there and all of the different ways that we think of disability and approach people that have disabilities. And some disabilities are visible, others are very much not visible, and you wouldn't ever suspect that they have a disability. And it very much humanized it, which is great, and almost universalized it, because you could turn around and, you know, picturing somebody on a subway or at a stadium or something, and the stranger next to you, whether you can see it or not, very well may have a disability. But even after trying to expand my worldview, never did I even consider ADHD might fall into that category.
Yeah, no, me either. And I'm, like I said, I deal with my own ADHD every single day. I have an alarm on my phone that reminds me to take my medication. Because how do you learn to remember to take medication that's designed to help you remember stuff? That's a weird thing. Mm. So I have to deal with it then, and I have to deal with it every time I interact with somebody who is not neurodivergent, who thinks in the quote-unquote normal way. Yeah, I mean, I think about it every day. And
Neurotypical, by the way. Neurotypical.
Yes. What did I say? Non-neurodivergent?
The quote-unquote normal way. And I like neurotypical because it avoids that word normal.
Yes, I agree. Thank you. That's a normal has some sort of almost moral or should behind it.
Yeah.
That is not at all what I intend. I really just mean a person whose brain generally operates the same way as generally everybody else's. hence the typical, literally neurotypical.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
And so that's a much better word. But yeah, I just wouldn't have. And it doesn't make any sense not to think of it as a disability because it impedes my functioning every single day. And if I did not believe that, I would not take a medication for it. And I am a vastly healthier, happier, and more productive human being because I take a medication for it. So clearly, I think it disables me in some way, shape, or form. Mm. But disability is a word that almost has a capital D in our culture.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love what you were saying that book says, because it, you know, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but A, I don't know that I want to be one of those people who is disabled.
Sure, sure.
Because that's a sort of permanent thing. And B, even if I do have some kind of disability, do I want to acknowledge that? Like one of the calculus equations that's going through my head as I'm filling out this application is, okay, they're asking this on an application. Are they more likely to hire me because I'm acknowledging I do have it? So look, yay, they're hiring people with disabilities. Or are they less likely to hire me because I'm acknowledging this? Because, oh, I'm not sure if we can work with this person because they have a disability. And I don't really love either of those. So I don't really like the fact that they're asking.
Which, gosh, that's such an interesting perspective, because I wonder if, like, I imagine that's not the only checkbox, right? So take your pick. I imagine there are people in all the other checkboxes that have a similar experience. Like, why do you want to know?
No, absolutely. It's right next to, are you a veteran? Which feels to me, as somebody who's not actually a veteran, maybe a vet would feel differently, that feels more neutral emotionally to me. Like, I have nothing but respect for those who have served our country, nothing but appreciation for them. I can't imagine a stigma that is associated with that, but I'm sure there is. I'm not saying there isn't. I'm just saying I have only one perspective on that. That makes it feel like that would be a fairly cut and dry one. But you raising that question is making me think, oh, yeah. I wonder if vets feel the same way. Why are you asking me if I'm a vet in order to apply for this job? If I have the credentials for it and the experience for it, what do you care if I'm a vet or not?
Yeah. Well, I think with the vets, it actually works in their favor in a lot of ways, because in a lot of jobs have veterans preference points. So I know at the city that I work for, when they are hiring, they have, like, you know, candidates score a certain amount of points based on the things that they've submitted, and then the veterans get a couple of extra points thrown on in addition to. So it doesn't necessarily guarantee you're going to move on to the next phase of the hiring process, but it certainly doesn't hurt. So that's actually, I think, a favorable thing for most people to check.
Like I said, that's why I am not less bothered if I'm getting points for my disability than if I'm losing points for it.
Well, at least the veterans thing is, like, I chose this. I went and did this, and I served in this capacity, and now I'm getting some benefit for it, which I think is a very different thing than, like, I happen to be neurodivergent, and so now you're going to give me points for that. That almost feels like pity points.
Right. That's exactly what it feels. And if anybody's listening who is a vet or who is closely connected with a vet, if in any way I or we say something that is not appropriately empathetic or honoring, please forgive me. That is not at all my intent. I'm just feeling the fact that I'm talking about something about which I know super little. And so I just want to make sure my intent is out there. But yeah, it's...
Well, so it's let me ask you...
weird.
Let me ask you this. So you talk about your intent in terms of speaking about the job application and stuff, but, you know, this is something that's very personal for you, something that as you have gone through your adult life, and as you said, I've gotten to see this as your friend, you have had this growing understanding of ADHD and its effect on your life and how you're going to deal with it. And we've been doing this podcast now for, well, this is episode 94. So, like, you've mentioned it. But this is the first time we're, like, doing a full-scale podcast episode on ADHD. So what is your motivation for wanting to talk about it?
You know, I think there's several things going on in my head here. One is what you talked about how on some level no one's neurotypical. We all have something that makes us different or other. And learning to get inside other people's heads is so important. And this particular issue, the issue of ADHD, comes to mind for me because it's something I wrestle with all the time and have often felt misunderstood, even by people who know about ADHD, even by people who know me well, even by people who are well-meaning. I've just often felt very misunderstood. And so I think my driver is to say, it's okay to acknowledge a classification system. You know, I grew up in an era when "don't label me" was a sort of thing that people said about all sorts of things. There's nothing wrong with a label. A label doesn't mean everything about me is known or understood, but it is a good starting point. Whether I call myself an introvert as a label or call myself someone who deals with ADHD as a label. Now, I don't necessarily want other people to apply those labels for me, but if I'm willing to apply those labels, that can be quite helpful. as a starting point to understand me. So yeah, I guess that's my major reason, is just this is a good example of a thing that is often misunderstood, that is a reminder that whatever thing other people are dealing with, if I'm not dealing with it too, and even if I am, their experience is easily misunderstood.
Yeah. This word misunderstood has come up a couple of times, and man, that word really hits home for me. Because as your friend, I don't want to misunderstand you or throw you into a negative bucket. But I have to admit that one of my categories for understanding ADHD is the hyperactive kid in a classroom who can't sit still and can't focus. And ADHD conjures that image almost immediately. And an adult dealing with ADHD just doesn't necessarily cross my mind. So it's, I think, fascinating to hear an adult talk about ADHD. But here's the other thing that why, quote unquote, being misunderstood is so key for me. So my wife has recently suspected that she deals with ADHD. And she's taken some of these tests that, like, her doctor gave her a questionnaire to fill out. And, you know, she filled that out and was like, oh, yep, that's ADHD. And so it's fascinating for her to be in her 40s and to kind of discover this about her and what that might mean. And I have to admit, I have really misunderstood her all these years, and I struggle to change my mental framework in light of this term, this disability, ADHD. And so, yeah, this word misunderstood, it just resonates with me and in ways that I would really rather not admit.
Yeah, that makes sense, especially with the stereotype of ADHD, which I was as a child. The challenge is that not only is it different for an adult, but even for little kids who are girls, it tends to not manifest that way.
Right.
It manifests drastically different in girls.
Yeah.
In ways that can be completely missed.
Exactly my wife's experience. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, from what I'm told, and I actually don't know a lot of women who can share their experience with this, but from what I'm told, it can function far more like zoning out than hyperactivity is one way to understand the difference. Because at the end of the day, the real thing that's going on with ADHD, if we want to oversimplify it, is the part of the brain that is the control center that determines what am I going to pay attention to? How am I going to respond? That control center of the brain, somebody said, it's like that was hijacked by a goblin. And so it's not that folks with ADHD can't pay attention. I have a profound ability to pay attention. If you ever sit down one-on-one with me, I will listen to you and you will think there is nothing else going on in my world, even if I just had horrible news, because I can set aside everything and listen to a person. I can hyperfixate on a conversation, but that's about the only thing I can do that on. Because the real issue is I can't always control what I pay attention to. That's where the goblin is in control and I'm not.
So if you don't mind, I would love to ask, in what ways have you felt misunderstood as an adult? Because here's the thing I think is really fascinating, to talk to an adult who can put language around ADHD. Because my mental image is of a child that probably doesn't have language to describe what's going on for them or how it feels to interact with others in light of ADHD. And so how have you felt misunderstood? How has this crept up in the way that you interact with the world?
Sure. I think on the one hand, I don't know if this is just as an adult, but all through my childhood, I feel like I was perceived as lazy because I wouldn't finish tasks. I couldn't get things done all the time. When I did them, they were done sloppily. I wouldn't see or remember tasks that were given to me. I could have a whole conversation with somebody about a task and then not know I needed to do it. So that's one way. The other, one of the key kind of kid statistics about ADHD. A child with ADHD is told no on average 10,000 times more than a neurotypical kid by the time he or she is 10.
Whoa.
Yeah. No in the in the broadest sense. They get kind of negative messages. 10,000 more negative messages by the time they're 10.
What's the net effect of that?
I mean, a general sense of ineptitude or unworthiness or shame, a comprehensive sense of less than-ness or inadequacy, that you're always, every minute, you're proving your worth. And for me, if you put all of this together, a compulsion to get it done now. This is going to be a little bit more black and white than I mean it to be, but I'm a loser if I don't accomplish the task. And if I don't do it right now, I'm going to forget. So I better do it right now or I'm a loser.
Mm.
Kind of creates this compulsion of, gotta get it done now. Gotta get it done right now. Gotta get it done right now. If I don't do it right now, it's not going to get done. I gotta get it done right now.
Mm.
You know, sort of, if you remember the not particularly Christian movie Memento.
Oh, I only watched that once. I repented of it though, and I never watched it again. No, I'm kidding. I only watched it once.
Well, then forget it. It's about somebody who can't make new memories, but I resonated with pieces of it.
Hmm.
But so I think there's some of that. And then bringing that into the adult sphere, I think two things happen. On the one hand, people who don't know you have ADHD misjudge your motives or actions for the worse. And people who know you do have ADHD often misjudge your motives, and they just, any misstep you take, they assume it's the ADHD.
Oh, interesting. So I would have thought the opposite, that people were not allowing for the ADHD to be the reason, and that it's some character defect or something like that. But you're saying your experience is more people blame it on the ADHD?
Either one. There's some of both. There's the, why didn't you get this done? Like, you're a bad person kind of thing. But most of the, those aren't people that I'm allowing into my life. I have moved on from that group of people. If somebody's disinterested in believing in ADHD or something, I'm probably not having a real conversation with them because we're not in the same place.
Mm.
But far more it's accommodating in ways I didn't ask for or writing off my mistakes. What complicates this is that maybe it is the ADHD. I have no idea because I can't see outside my own head. But somebody else telling me, oh, your ADHD is probably why whatever, and I've had bosses tell me that and whatever, I don't find that helpful. Mm. I find that to be deeply shame awakening.
Mm.
It feels like gently weaponizing my label. Like, I'm going to put you in that box, and that doesn't feel good to me. And maybe that's my own brokenness and insecurity about being in the box. Maybe if I had more self-acceptance, I would recognize that when people say, man, maybe that's your ADHD, I'd be like, yeah, maybe it is.
Well, I can, just trying to apply this in a different sphere, and I can see how people would do this because we don't know how to relate to ADHD, or we don't know how to understand what it's like to have ADHD if we don't have it. And so the same is true of, let's say, being in a wheelchair. I don't know what it's like to live your life in a wheelchair. And so if a wheelchair user were to say to me, sorry, I'm running late, I think it would feel almost natural to be like, oh, that's okay. I imagine it takes you a long time to get ready or something like that, right? Which is what you're describing as like, don't throw me in the box. I'm a full human being. Sometimes I just oversleep, like, or whatever it is, it's not
exactly
as though
sometimes
everything...
there's just an accident on the road and it has nothing to do with whether or not somebody's in a wheelchair or not. And
right.
They just got stuck in traffic.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. That's exactly it.
Well, okay, so that's just interaction with, everyday society. But I imagine there are people listening to this podcast who have children with ADHD. And what would you like them to know from your experience?
Hmm. I think, first of all, that professionals are very helpful.
Mm.
And not immediately. Like, so, you know, my son has ADHD and this is not his story. So I'm not going to talk about him a lot. But I will say we waited to investigate medication with him until he was ready and willing and interested. And that's still how I would go back and do that. So it's not like I wouldn't say, boy, we need to medicate people immediately or something. That's why I think it's just professionals are helpful and professionals are on your team. They're not trying to like get insurance payment. People in the mental health field, whether they're, which by the way, one of the mistakes people make all the time, a psychiatrist is somebody who prescribes medicine and a counselor or therapist is somebody who does talk therapy. People get those labels wrong all the time.
True.
But seeing either a psychiatrist or a therapist or a professional, there are a growing number of ADHD coaches, people who are specifically in the coaching world, but who focus on ADHD. I think those things are all very helpful when they're helpful. I think learning your kid's experience and creating space for your kid to talk about his or her experience without you evaluating it too much is really important. Mm. And man, as a parent of someone with ADHD, not only is it unfortunate that no is said too many times, it has to be said too many times. You don't get out of that. So
that's super interesting.
Write the ledger on the other side.
I'm so glad you said that, because I could imagine if I were a parent listening to this podcast and hearing that earlier about the 10,000 extra no's and the shame it produces and all of that, I could imagine feeling some shame myself and thinking, oh, shoot, I tell my kid no too often. I'm doing damage to my kid. This isn't okay. I need to fix this. And sure, maybe there's room for growth. We all have it, right? But what I hear you saying is a natural outcropping of ADHD is that a child often needs to be told no more than a neurotypical kid.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is why I think investing in the relationship extra is the way to solve that. Not saying no when you need to.
Mm, that's so good. Well, so you talked a little bit about medication, and I know in certain evangelical circles, medication of various sorts has a complicated history and a complicated acceptance. And I think particularly when it comes to psychological medication, there's very big polar extremes on how people view that. Can you tell us a little bit about your own personal journey with deciding to use medication?
Yeah, sure. So I recognized that I had ADHD probably 5 to 6 years before I started taking medication. And I would have labeled myself correctly as a high-functioning person with ADHD who has learned lots of adaptive strategies to deal with any challenges it puts in my way. All very true. I was an executive pastor at the time. I was leading a staff. I was running programs. I was functioning well. And I didn't start taking medication until I got to the point where I needed to have the conversation with my son. And it felt hypocritical to have the conversation with my son if I was unwilling to have it with myself. And so I honestly started taking medication so that I wouldn't be a hypocrite. but then the difference for me, there's two or three things. Number one, people say all the time, I'm going to come back to that later, or I'll do that later. And they don't do anything about it. They're just sort of mentally log. And then a flip switches later on in their brain. And they think of that thing again at a convenient time. Until I started taking medication, that had never happened to me. And I fully believed every time somebody said that, they were full of BS.
Huh.
Like, I comprehensively believed that was a stupid thing to say that people were saying because they were too lazy to write it down. And I fully remember the first time that ever happened to me when I said, man, I have got to remember that later. And I couldn't write it down because I was driving or something, whatever. That night I was in my house, I had my fridge open, and the switch flipped for the first time in my life, and I remembered the thing that I needed to remember. It almost knocked me off my feet because it genuinely had never happened to me in my life.
Wow. And that was a direct result of taking medication?
100%. It wasn't therapy. It wasn't, because that's a brain functioning issue. You can't therapize your brain into working. That's just not how that works. You can take medication that helps your brain work better. So there was that. And then there was the experience of being able to be patient with multiple stimuli. For example, just a real concrete example of this is, before I started taking medication, if my dog was barking, again, ADHD is I can't control my attention. So every bark that came out of my dog got my full and undivided attention to the degree that it erased everything out of my mind, completely against my will.
Yeah.
That is rage inducing for me. I mean, I would get so angry. And when I started taking medication, my ability to control where my attention goes certainly is not great, but at least I can hold on to the other thing, notice the fact that I'm being distracted by the dog, know that it's going to end and come back to the other thing and not be completely lost. Because beforehand, for the medication, it would be, I'm now listening to the barking dog and I don't know what I was thinking before.
Mm.
I know it was about this project, but what was I thinking about this project? I don't know. It's gone. And I don't know how to get it back. And having that happen, a dog can bark 100 times in 5 minutes. You just turn into a crazy person.
Man, that word crazy person just really, that's what my wife says all the time. She's like, I feel like I'm a crazy person. And that phrase gets used so much. And to hear her describe what leads up to her saying that, and to hear you describe what leads up to that, I can imagine just how infuriating that experience is.
Oh, I remember times when I would go down and emotionally unload on the dog. I'm not hitting the dog. I would yell at the dog as if that would have any impact on anything. But
sure.
I just could not control how angry I felt at the dog being able to control my brain.
Mm. Yeah.
And not being able to escape. And I'm highly auditory in the way that I process. So it wasn't just a dog. That's just an example. It's every single sound. So going through life with every sound disrupting your flow. And the medication, again, helped me have the ability to say, I'm going to focus on this thing, this conversation, this podcast, this project, this person.
Hmm.
Not perfectly, by any stretch. If this is a scale of 0 to 10, I was at a 1 and now I'm at a 4.5. But boy, a 4.5 feels like a miracle after a 1.
Hmm. So I know we want to move on to other topics here on the podcast, but before we do, I would love to know, you talked about the idea of being misunderstood. Can you tell me what it's like, or maybe describe an experience of actually being understood and feeling comfortable with somebody in light of your ADHD? How do you know when somebody gets it and you can feel comfortable with them?
I can only think of two experiences that have ever felt that way to me. And both of them were trained professionals. One was a psychiatrist and one was a therapist. Both weren't trying to tell me what my experience was like. They both were just listening to my experience. And when I described it, they both said, wow, that's a really good description of that. Thank you for telling me that. I've not heard anybody say it that well before.
Hmm.
And the fact that my explanation of my own experience was validated was really meaningful to me. But generally, I don't talk to a lot of folks who also have ADHD. So I would imagine a support group kind of situation would have a lot of this benefit. I just haven't gone that route. Sometimes, certainly, talking to my son, who is virtually my doppelganger, has some of this. But the two that really had an emotional impact were both with professionals.
Huh. Well, I want to thank you so much for opening up about your experience. I know we really dove deep into ADHD from your particular perspective. So thank you for that. I can imagine that our audience has had a variety of experiences with ADHD, from, you know, stereotyping like I do with like that being the hyperactive kid that can't sit still in class, or maybe they know somebody, or maybe they are themselves neurodivergent in some way. And so I imagine that this is going to speak to a lot of different people. So I just really appreciate your time and your willingness to talk about this.
Well, thank you for being willing to let me talk about it. It's really good to, I think being able to share about ways in which we're different is wildly important. And even as we turn to the audience, this is one of the ways in which people may engage that we may never know about. Whatever your challenges are, it is my hope that you have somebody with whom you can discuss it, because that is a valuable part of the process.
Yeah. So I'd encourage our audience to start a conversation. Forward this podcast on to somebody. Maybe you are a leader in an organization and you want to know, you want to start a conversation among leaders. How do we support our staff or our people that may have this or any other, quote, disability? Or maybe you want to start a conversation with a friend and talk about your own experiences with this. I would love it if you would take this podcast and share it with somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, and if I can turn the conversation a little bit, I'm really curious what you've been thinking about this week.
Yeah, so I'm thinking a lot, actually. For the first time this week, I've allowed myself to start thinking about this. So my middle child, my daughter, and my youngest son are going to India on a mission trip over spring break. And yeah, it's the same mission trip that my wife and daughter went on last year. They are working in an orphanage in eastern India where a number of kids affected by HIV/AIDS are living. And they loved it last time. And my daughter is a huge kid person. She just loves to care for kids. Mm. And so it was just right up her alley. But this year, my youngest son is going as well. And neither me nor my wife are going. We are sending our kids overseas without us. And the youth pastor and a number of other people from our church are going. A couple other youth are going, but they all have their parents going. But we are not going. And it's kind of interesting. Later tonight, we have to go and sign over temporary guardianship to the youth pastor. From this day to this day, you are our kids' guardian, which is fascinating. But we're just so excited for them and what they will experience. The reason I feel like I can actually pay attention to this and think about it is that they are finally fully funded. And that was a huge undertaking, and it just felt so stressful, especially for my kids as they were trying to raise all that money. But they are fully funded and now fully excited to be going on this trip. So that's what I'm thinking.
Awesome. About. Now, I'm trying to do the math here. Is it possible that the week this episode comes out is the week that they're away?
Ooh, yeah, I'd have to do the math also. But yes, I think that is very close to accurate.
So if you are listening to this, I would invite you to take a moment sometime this week and pray for that trip, because that's a really exciting opportunity that they have. And for God to work through whatever's going on that trip would be a really exciting thing.
Yeah, it really would. And I'll tell you what, the kids in the orphanage, they look forward. So our church partners with this organization and with this orphanage in particular. And so we send teams out there twice a year. And so these kids just get so excited to see people that they've built a relationship with, or at least people from the church with which they've built a relationship. So yeah, they just light up. It's a cool opportunity. So I'm so stoked.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But how about you? What have you been thinking about?
Oh, well, I am getting ready to preach in a couple weeks at my church for the first time, which is super fun. And I'm just really intrigued by the passage that I'm going to be preaching on, which is Luke 8, 16 and following, Jesus has just done the parable of the sower, and he explained it. And this is the part where he goes from explaining the parable to this idea that no one covers a lamp, or no one lights a lamp and puts it under the bed. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then he says, "For nothing is hidden that will not be made manifest, nor is anything secret that will not be known and come to light." And there's a million things I actually think Jesus is saying. This is incredibly dense. But one of the things that I think is really interesting is that the language here, if I'm understanding correctly, one of the words Jesus uses is a almost a technical word from the Greek mystery religions. And the mystery cults really were this active, sort of secretive religious group that on some level actually parallel the way we do religion in a secular society today. Religion as something that is personal, it's between me and God. That was kind of where they were at. And then on the other side of the religious fence back in Jesus' day were the very formal, very public religions that were universal, celebrating the well-known Greek and Roman gods, that were really as much about civic identity as they were about religious identity.
Mm-hmm.
And in what Jesus is saying here, he is sort of taking a middle ground between the secretive personal religion and the formalized public religion, and sort of cutting a place for his followers in the middle of both. And the way in which these cultural factors appear to be on Jesus' mind, because even one of these mystery religions, the most well-known of them, was about the death and life cycle as it was symbolized in wheat. And mm-hmm. so for Jesus to be saying this right after the parable of the sower, again, sort of builds on the fact that he's working with mental images and ideas that his people know. And it's just fascinating to me how much richer what he has to say and how much more systemic what he has to say is when you know the cultural context. He's making a statement about the position of authentic religion in the wider culture, not just how an individual person responds to God. And that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, no doubt. Makes me want to read that passage again. You said that's from Luke 8?
Yeah, it's Luke 8, 16 and following.
Okay. I love that. And I think that's the kind of stuff that makes for great sermon content, because it just brings the text to life so much. But then that's just the cool stuff about study. It's you never know when you're going to pick up a nugget like that and go, oh, now I see this just in a brand new way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, I have like 15 really interesting thoughts about this. If I had known the text I was going to be preaching on a little bit earlier, I would have asked you to do an on-air conversation about it. But I didn't know it early enough to give you time to prep.
Sure.
But it's just a fascinating little text that I think we often misunderstand. So
there's that word again.
Yep, there it is. Misunderstand. We got to be careful about that. But speaking about being misunderstood, I think it's important to close up with a formal opportunity for everybody to be misunderstood with a Which Josh question.
Okay. All right. I love the transition, and I love the Which Josh question. So let's do it.
All right. Here it is. This week's Which Josh question is, which Josh is taller?
Oh, I think that's me.
Yeah. It is you. Is that... I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure as well. But we're not in the same place enough for me to be absolutely sure, but I'm 98% sure I'm taller than you.
Yes, I am equally. So I'm just under 5'10", and I think you are closer to 6 feet.
Yes. Yeah, I'm pretty much dead on with 6 feet.
Okay. Yep.
So there you go.
Yes, there you go.
You know, we often have like a little story that goes with a Which Josh question or something fun, some little tidbit. I have no tidbit. Like, Okay.
That's taller. Hilarious. See, we have a list of these that we work off of, and you put this on the list, I believe. And
So you're saying it's my fault that I don't have a story?
It's not that your fault. I don't care if you do or not, but I thought you had a story until just now, apparently.
Well,
could you lie and make one up for us?
Yeah. So last time we were together, I started noticing your bald spot. And when you didn't even notice it, I started having a little conversation, side conversation with your kids. And I'm surprised that they're not pestering you about it. How was that? Did you want to go back to having no story?
I have the thickest hair. Like I have genetically very thick hair. That is not a problem I think I will ever have, but we'll go with it.
All right. I think we should just have a different conversation next week.
All right. You on for next week?
I'm ready.
All right. I'll talk to you then.
Okay. Bye-bye.